nowhere in there is actually teaching a particular subject. It's more focused on the skills, the experiences, and then actually the outcome achievements.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Joel Nicholson, co-founder, CEO, and youth coach of Youthfully. So Joel, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
I'm really excited to have this conversation. Your programming is really, really intriguing to me, and I think that our listeners will really enjoy it an awful lot. But let's set a bit of context as we get started. Youthfully is a leading coaching and development platform for students. Youthfully flips the antiquated one-size-fits-all educational model on its head by offering powerful one-on-one coaching, usually reserved for top executives, and making it accessible to young people through an innovative platform, which we are going to talk about, I think, in a lot of detail. So Youthfully helps students really sort of come into their own, and it has a high success rate in terms of world's top employers and universities, and thanks to its unique holistic approach that crafts and works with the whole student. So Joel, first and foremost, because you're also a founder, and so my listeners know that I love talking to founders, we have an awful lot of things in common. And so I always like to start with what on earth were you thinking? Because founding anything is a ton of work. So why do this?
It's become my life's mission to effectively scale high quality personalized learning in a sense. And I grew up in a family of teachers. My mom was a special education teacher. My dad was a guidance counselor. And my whole extended family were teachers as well. And so I was able to come home every day from school and basically be able to talk to them about education and why is it structured this way and why am I learning this particular subject, and get support from my dad on my future direction and things like that. And so I've always been super passionate about education. I didn't study education. I actually studied business and I went into a career of management consulting. But only after about 4 years, I just felt that calling that I had to break into, you know, the world of education and my other passion, which is technology. And that's where I started my first ed tech company, which was Campus Rankings. And then more recently, Youthfully, which is focused on one-on-one coaching.
I love that piece of your story too. Very similar for myself, my entire family, they're all teachers too. So I totally understand what it means to kind of grow up in sort of that sort of environment. You feel really, really connected to it. And yet you go off into the world, you do something else because, hey, that's not going to be me, right? And then find yourself coming back to it because you know how important it is. So I really appreciate that element of your story. I want to talk a little bit about one of the elements of Youthfully that I found really interesting, and and lots of materials, you know, when I'm digging around to find out who is this guy, Joel Nicholson. And I've seen numerous times the reference that you've made to this idea of holistic coaching. I really love that term. So share with us, what do you mean by that? And then how does that concept really sort of set the stage, if you will, for the Youthfully platform and the way Youthfully works?
Well, students are so multifaceted. People are multifaceted. There's no single dimension that I think you can necessarily focus in a mutually exclusive manner anymore with education. The world is just so intertwined and overlapping that it's very hard to just separate specific components of ourselves and say, I'm going to educate that. I'm going to train someone on one specific component. And so holistic to us is really just this notion that there isn't really a lot of mutually exclusive elements about a person anymore. And then the other notion is a lot of outcomes that people want, getting into a top-tier university or launching their entrepreneurial project or getting a great job or self-publishing a book, whatever it is, that requires holistic skills, not just one particular area of understanding or expertise. And oftentimes also universities and employers are evaluating candidates holistically, meaning they no longer just focus on things like grades or standardized test scores. They're really trying to understand the whole person, the whole student. And so that's where we try to say, okay, well, if they're trying to evaluate the whole candidate, why don't we build the person into the best possible student that they can be?
I love that. And I think you're absolutely right. Obviously, the anthropologist in me, you know, really appreciates the fact that you're thinking about the whole individual and their whole place, you know, in the world and society, their community, so on and so forth. Super, super important. I want to talk a little bit about the idea around making available and structuring the work that you're doing in the way that you've crafted youthfully to be based on the idea of really high quality yet accessible one-on-one coaching that, you know, to your point in the introduction that we made, is often reserved only for the extremely wealthy or high-end executives. It's just not the everyday norm. So when you started thinking about crafting this and the value proposition that could come for students from that, how do you wrestle with all of those elements to come up with a model and then plop it down into your ed tech platform and then really make it a tool and an experience that has a tremendous added benefit on the flip side for those students? As like you said, they go off to a passion project. That's one of the things that is an option that's available to students with you, or their college admissions or that first job, or to your point, that great project they want to do. So how do you think about that?
There's really two things that we focus on when it comes to the delivery, or two things that we believe. First of all, is that this vision that we believe in is that the classroom model is just so outdated. It's about 200 years old, if not longer. But actually, if you go further back in history, most education was really one-on-one. And it was folks like Aristotle who would tutor people during the day, and then they'd go hang out around their area in the evening and sort of chit chat around the community. So it was just this power of one to one. And one of the most compelling studies in educational research is the Bloom Two Sigma study, which essentially shows that a one on one education gets 2 standard deviations higher than any conventional learning methodology. And so understanding that research compared to all these other educational initiatives that have been done, it's super compelling to know that one-on-one works. So we take that notion, one-on-one, and then I pair it also with this other notion, which is coaching. And when I was reflecting on my educational experience, I wanted that one person to help me out, but it wasn't just a tutor. It was someone who ideally had some industry experience who could actually tell me what the industry was like that I wanted to break into or had accomplished some of the goals that I was seeking to accomplish, and wasn't just telling me what to do, was actually just more supporting my thinking and listening and challenging me to be a bit more clear and asking tough questions through this non-directive coaching approach, which, yeah, traditionally has only been reserved for executives. My dad, as a guidance counselor, learned these skills, but him and my guidance counselors always said they don't have time to coach. So you pair the power of one-to-one with the additional power of non-directive coaching, which also has a tremendous amount of supporting research in students to improve skills, emotional intelligence, academic and career outcomes. And we've seen it ourselves internally at Youthfully. And that's just such an incredible combination. And so that's sort of what we're trying to build here. The challenge, though, is how do you scale that? So you need technology, you need certifications and standardized training and delivery. And so that's why we built our own methodology, our certification, and then also our tech platform.
I mean, I think it's a really great question. How do you really scale? I mean, at the end of the day, right, unfortunately, Youthfully is not available to every kid everywhere, right? It's just that's just the nature of the beast, right? But there are elements of the work that you're doing that are in fact scalable, and you're seeing successes with those, I assume, with the students who find their way into the program. And I want to talk about that part of next, how kids get there. But I'm really, really curious about, you know, so you're that guidance counselor out there, right? And you have the same problem your dad had. That hasn't changed, unfortunately, right? You know, those poor folks are serving way too many kids. They don't have time. You know, it's all about checking boxes mostly, and not because that's the reason they went into being guidance counselors. Most of the ones that I know, you know, they went into it because they care, right? And they really, really wanted to help kids find their future. Yet the systems, those obsolete, out-of-date systems we were just talking about, really are not conducive for those folks to be able to do that kind of work. So, you know, the endeavors like yours are desperately important, but what are those elements? I'm super curious, and then we'll move on. You know, the things that you have found in terms of like being able to build time or being able to structure something differently so that folks can in fact spend quality one-on-one and mentoring or coaching time. How is that even possible in your mind? Because you're an innovator, you wouldn't be sitting in this space right now.
Yeah. And so how is it possible from just the time that the students have or?
All the way around, I guess, right? You know, because the reality is that question, you ask the right question, how do you get to scale? And the answer is you're not going to be able to get to scale one single element. That's not possible for any of us. But how do we take the elements of what's really working well and masterfully within youthfully and are able to scale that to more kids or more adults in that space? How do you do that?
We've got to start partnering more with government and schools, quite frankly. And we primarily have focused the first several years of our organization's efforts on just directly serving families because we wanted to prove out the model and build out the technology. And one significant step in the journey to scale, which in our belief is really becoming fully integrated into the education system, was our social impact program. And we partnered with a district school board called Blue Water District School Board in Ontario, Canada. And we're providing free coaching for low-income or underrepresented students in the district. And those students are nominated by guidance counselors. And we work alongside guidance counselors to support those students. And that was a big step in the right direction. But the next step is being able to really scale these types of partnerships. Because yeah, we could try to scale on the direct to family side, but that's just a lot of marketing and branding and putting money into an area that could be put into another area of our organization, which would be investing in our coaches, investing in our technology. For example, the Ontario government, I'm from Canada originally, so I'm extremely knowledgeable about the policies up here. The Ontario Ministry of Education announced a $14 million investment into career coaching, but we hadn't really been reached out to. And as the, from our understanding, you know, we were one of the original creators of this concept of virtual youth coaching. So I was a bit surprised how we hadn't really been reached out. We're going to try to engage with them because when it comes to serving an entire province of students, they're going to find that you need technology, you need standards.
Oh, yeah.
We need a collective sort of openness to partnering with a private and public sector. And then also at the same time with universities, we are starting to work with career services to support their advisors. So I think the biggest thing to scale is we have these foundations that we've been building, but we just need the distribution more. And the key to unlock distribution is really strong partnerships with educational bodies. And another example in the US would be Title I grants. Like what we did in Canada with Blue Water, that can be actually paid for through Title I with charter schools or with public school boards. And so we want to engage more with schools on grants like that.
You're 100% correct. Those public-private partnership elements, or however you want to structure them, depending on, you know, where you are in the world, we know we cannot do this independently all around. Not one element can do this and change that needle independently. So I appreciate your thinking about it that way. I do want to make sure that we spend a little bit of time sort of talking about what it's like for the student. So one of these students, maybe it's in that Blue Water District that you were talking about, you know, find their way, they get to participate in this program. So what happens to the student? What's that experience? Walk us through just a little bit of that journey. And then I want to make sure that we have time in our conversation to talk about a couple of the new initiatives that were mentioned in the materials that were sent to me, because I'm really intrigued by them.
So at the high school level, the first step is an intake. And that intake is for us to just understand what the student's goals are. This is something that we've often found is done incorrectly in education if they're rolling out a coaching program, is that they allow students to just book appointments, and usually those appointments are one-off. What we've found is you have to have a sort of an initial discovery intake to understand and help clarify what the student's goals are. And then from there, you're able to actually allocate them to more of a coaching program. And we learned this after many years, is instead of just general coaching that the student engages in, it's more helpful to have an outcome-oriented program. So once you've aligned on the student's goals, then you put them into a coaching program. And usually that program is anywhere between 4 to 10 hours of coaching. That we found is so much more beneficial at increasing the student's likelihood of achieving that outcome and just having more of an impact on that student's holistic development. And the first session with a coach is always focused on discovery. And in advance of that first session, we ask the student to complete our own proprietary student assessment that we call Self-Aware Student. And that asks them questions that articulate their skills, their values, certain elements of their background that have shaped who they are, you know, their grades, their extracurriculars. That way we get that holistic understanding of the student. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we call that first phase subterranean, you know, exploration. We want to go as deep as possible, understand the student more than anyone else has taken the time to do so. And then from there, craft a custom plan to help the student achieve their outcome. And this isn't the coach crafting it for them. It's non-directive coaching. So really putting the student in the driver's seat. And then after that, it's really execution. So hopping on ongoing calls. After years, we found that having a reoccurring call, either once a week, once every 2 weeks, once every month, whatever it is, it's got to be in the books. And that reoccurring nature will keep the student accountable, will make them complete the actions after the call so that they arrive on the next call and they're already done. And it keeps the progress moving. And then after that, it's a little bit of an iterative process where you're helping the student reflect on what they're learning, helping them navigate certain challenges or obstacles that they're facing in their goal. And then once they finish and sort of submit, let's say, an application or complete their project, reflecting on that learning experience as well, and if they want to pursue the next thing. So that's usually the journey that a student would take.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
How long would you say typically students participate in the program? So they get to that application. I'm really curious. I would think that some students would find that this one-on-one interaction is incredibly fulfilling, right? I mean, to your point, just that, you know, some brazened and smart adult out there taking an interest in a student, you know, that can be incredibly fulfilling. There's all these needs that we know that students have, and real deep mentorship coaching, we know those adult relationships are so meaningful for kids. So I would think that there's kids that were like, okay, yeah, now what? What's next, right? So I'm curious about what's the average stay, if you will, in the program, or is there one? Have you not really sort of tapped into that because it's just all over the place?
It is pretty wide ranging, but I would say the average is around 6 months. And then after that, maybe the student wants a bit of a break and maybe they want to pursue their own development in a more self-directed manner. What we find is often some students, not all, our goal is that a student won't need to coaching anymore, but some students come back and say, I have a new goal that I want to pursue. It's different than the one that we pursued earlier. Could you help me on that one? And so sometimes it's a bit of a stop start throughout their educational journey. Sometimes it's just a standalone program and the student is all set to go. And that's great. If we've been able to foster those types of lifelong skills that allow them to accomplish other skills down the road, then we believe that we've done our job as well.
I really, really love that. Just the ability for the students, A, to grow skills of their own, right? You know, that they can then coach themselves around some things, right? But then they also have the confidence and the autonomy to be able to come back and say, I want some more help. That alone, right, is a huge skill set that you've built up and kids to be able to have the wherewithal to be able to think about things like that. I'm also really curious about sort of this notion of a new era. And so the preparing kids for a post-AI world. So tell me about that work. That's super intriguing. Maybe it's just the words that you all put together, but I'm like, okay, what is this about? And how does it then relate to the rest of the work that you're doing?
This isn't my quote, but I heard this recently in a video. It said that something along the lines of the internet unbundled knowledge and then AI is finishing the job. And so like in my generation, we would always go to school and just ask, when am I going to learn this? Or when am I going to use this rather? Because it was very subject oriented learning. And often after the test, we know that Ebbinghaus, like forgetting curve, you forget 90% of stuff after, I think it's 2 weeks or a month or something like that. It's because you don't use it. And so I would come back to my house and often be that sort of devil's advocate, if you will, questioning some of the material that we're learning. But AI is creating that even more in many students. And they realize that they have this all-knowing tool where they can learn about any aspect of history that is relevant to them, or geography or science or math, more in a just-in-time fashion, and that AI will be able to explain it to them, you know, in their own personalized way that resonates to them, and possibly better than even one of the best experts in that subject material. So with that said, if knowledge is really no longer a differentiator, then what does education look like? And in my opinion, this is how we've structured youthfully, at least, we have these three levels. The first is foundations. And going back to where coaching starts, we see that coaching really doesn't start until around middle school. We see some sort of more advanced learners be open to it in later middle school, but normally it's for high school students and beyond. Mm-hmm. So they already know the arithmetic, the reading, the writing, and then foundations is a little bit beyond that. So emotional intelligence, communication skills, procrastination, time management. Every single student we talk to is struggling with these things. And it's not a comprehension of a particular math topic that is actually limiting them from getting a better grade in math. It's these other skills, problem solving, communication, those types of things. So that's foundations. Underneath foundations as well is this like understanding about who you are and where you're going. So self-awareness, and then an understanding of like what's out there. So that's that first layer, foundations. And then the second layer is experiences. So work experience, real world project experience, which I know you're a huge advocate of at your organization. Mm-hmm. Gaining those real world experiences and achievements, because you learn so much through this firsthand experience. And you're able to apply the knowledge and even ask for the knowledge at the time when you need it. And then after that is application. So this is like you need to apply for a job, or you need to maybe create a business plan for your entrepreneurial project, or you need to apply for a university or a scholarship. And that's the other thing that we support. So these three levels, and nowhere in there is actually teaching a particular subject. It's more focused on the skills, the experiences, and then actually sort of like the outcome achievements.
Oh, Joel, I love that so much. So much. I'm going to say Joel said this. And I really, really love it because it does. It resonates so much with exactly the way our organization thinks about those very same things, right? And you know what you're talking about, we see in action as well. And so I always just love hearing other people saying, yeah, yeah, this is the way that we need to be thinking about this, because I think that you're really right. And I love the way you prefaced this. It's like, okay, now what do I really need to know? Where's that next level of my own learning and engagement going to go in a world that is now very, very different in many, many ways. So I appreciate that very much. I'm curious, and I've got so many kids, I could think, oh my goodness, they need to just go and spend time with Joel and Youthfully because they could so benefit from that kind of coaching. It would be epically awesome. But I'm really curious then, as the students then start to find their way through, and you as an organization are really working around those, understanding, you know, the shifts that have to happen as learners really sort of move through learning ecosystems and away from traditional school, let's say, right? So, you know, a series of foundational growth opportunities that come with experiences, and then they get to actually apply those things. How do you think, or maybe it's less of a how and it's more of a when do you think then that we're going to see that way of thinking about the future of education really become more mainstream? I know the systems are different in Canada than they are in the US and they are in India or Australia. We've got a lot of different systems that are out there in the world, but globally we're struggling from a lot of the same types of things, of systems that are really, really outdated and have not been reimagined. And so at what point do you think, I'm just curious, you may not know the answer to this, and it may be something that you just think about, but haven't really arrived, and that's okay too. But how do we go from where we've been to what we really desperately need next?
It's a great question. I think that families, you know, what we're seeing is that families are already feeling this, and we try to engage in some ways with particularly private schools. The common response is we already do this. And, you know, my thinking is, well, if you already did it, then why do we have so many of your families actually working with us? So I think it's like just being more open for schools to collaborate with a private organization, because we've invested very heavily into our technology and our certifications, into our coaching network, into our community, into our students, and working together, we all have the same goal, helping them fulfill their potential in their career and their education and their personal potential. So I think that's probably the first thing in terms of when this is going to have that tipping point nature. I'm not sure, but we start to see some early indications of that happening, starting to see career services at universities sort of treat their advisors more as coaches. They're investing heavily into their own training. We're piloting some programs with universities to roll out one-on-one and group specialized coaching programs for students. And then just the openness of some innovators like the Blue Water District School Board to be able to collaborate with us on, you know, our social impact project. It really takes these innovators, these early adopters to share the same vision that we have, to really become part of something amazing. I think we're at this really key point in education right now where we can change the delivery model from the classroom model to something more personalized. And, you know, parents and students are making decisions with their feet, and they're leaving a lot of these traditional schools. You've probably seen the growth of homeschooling programs and alternative education programs. And I think it'll probably come a time where some universities and districts and private schools are facing enrollment declines and maybe financial pressure, where the pain will be great enough for them to maybe reach out. All I would encourage is reach out now. We will collaborate and help your students and you. You know, teachers out there will help you be able to focus on the teaching and not on, you know, the one-to-one reviewing a university application or helping a student figure out what they want to do with their lives or teaching them about, you know, AI or something like that. So it's hard to predict, but we're early and we see those early behaviors of the adopters and the innovators who will help us move in that direction.
Yeah, no, I agree with you and appreciate that as well. We're seeing the same thing in the sense that, you know, we've got post-secondary institutions that are no longer requiring high school diplomas. We've got a few now that are no longer, you know, that are accepting mastery transcripts, right, instead of traditional grades and courses. And so I suspect you're right. We're going to see more and more and more of that. And as we see more of that, because that's what families are opting in for their kids, right? And so that the traditional sort of outward crap, let's be honest, that goes into a traditional college application is just not even going to exist for those students because it's not the environment in which they came from. And I think that those are going to be the kids that post-secondary should really be looking for, right? Because they're going to be out-of-the-box thinkers. They're going to be confident. They're going to have just incredible skills. Those are going to be the kids that those institutions are going to want and should be competing for. So I agree.
I think that's quite innovative that some post-secondary institutions aren't requiring that. At the same, sort of in the same vein, some employers are no longer requiring any post-secondary degree. Google is one of them where I think something like 80% of their jobs actually don't require any formal post-secondary education. And some of our students have completely foregone top university programs to just pursue a job right after high school because that's the end goal, right? So if you can just jump right to that real world experience, some students don't necessarily see the value in going to a four-year education for them if the goal is just to get a job. Now, I understand some other students get value in other ways where it's the overarching experience and the growth potential, the network and things like that. But yeah, there's just different needs, different wants from the customer, which is the student, and in some cases the parent.
Yeah, and absolutely right. You know, the sort of post-secondary attainment can and should look many different ways, right? So just because I choose not to do it right now when I'm 18 years old and don't really know what I want to do, you know, doesn't mean I don't go back later. And when I go back later, it might look completely different for me if I go back at all. And so, you know, not to say we're not advocating for, you know, continuous education because we're lifelong learners, I have no doubt, right? And so, but I love the way that you're thinking about that, you know, it's an individual journey. And we should honor that individual journey. So I appreciate that very much. Joel, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to join us and have this conversation. Share with us your work, your thinking, and certainly all the great happenings that are going on with Youthfully. And so I would encourage our listeners, if you're interested, please reach out to Joel. We will provide that information in the show notes, as well as take a look at Youthfully and what it has to offer and be in touch. Again, Joel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I love these conversations. I feel more excited and ready to take on the world after having conversations with people like yourself who kind of see the world in the same way. So yeah, excited for this to be maybe one of many future conversations. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look forward to it. I have no doubt we'll chat again. So thank you so much. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.